Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
And welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And this is where we look at why what's on the charts is on the charts. A lot of stuff to get to this week. But first, just want to brought this up last week on the podcast. We have messages. So far, Trevor, our new Chart Beat Podcast hotline, people are already calling for next week's 100th episode coming up next week of the podcast. We want you to be on it, the listener. I've already got a couple questions that we're planning to play back and answer for next week.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys sat through that horrendous voicemail that we will actually be redoing. So if you haven't heard the old voicemail, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be like one of those secrets lost to history that only a few select group of people will have heard. But if you have not had the chance to call yet, get those phones out. Put us on pause, whatever you got to do for a second. Take down this number. Take down. Oh, my God. My operator, my dispatch.
It feels like we're doing a telethon here.
Almost, yeah.
We're giving away tote bags?
212-493-4021. So that plays out as a 212-493-4021.
You said it the right way.
Get it? Do you get 40 to 1? Gary made this up, if you couldn't tell.
Like a countdown, 40 to 1.
So be sure to give us a call. We'll be on the air next week for our 100th episode spectacular. Any questions you have about either some things on the charts, the charts themselves, how they work, anything for us personally, whatever you want to send, put it in that voicemail. We'll play some of those on air next week and have a sort of quote-unquote interactive episode.
You forgot to say operators are standing by.
Also standing by, we've got a couple great guests this week for you guys. First, an in-house specialty. Maybe if some of you have heard the podcast Billboard has been doing.
Yeah, we're going to ask Andrew.
Coming around again, Gary and I have been on there a couple of times. We're going to reverse course and bring the host of that, Andrew Untenberger. We're going to break down a song that shows up this week in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100 and talk about what this means for this particular artist and open that discussion to some other artists who all have one sort of dubious distinction on their resume that hopefully, you know, in the next coming weeks, months, some of them may check off.
Yeah, the good thing about it is, if I look at it more positively, there have been other acts, even recently on this list, who have then hit a big honor on the Hot 100, and they're not on this list anymore. So maybe this act will be the next one to do that too. Our other guest, this is a little bit different, Trevor. We'll get into more details about how this interview, it's going to close the podcast, came up. But we're going to talk to Bill Danoff. If you don't know the name, he wrote a couple huge Hot 100 hits from the 1970s. Even if you're a younger listener born way after the 70s, you probably know these songs. John Denver's Take Me Home Country Roads and Starland Vocal Band's Afternoon Delight. We're going to talk to the writer of those songs. So we'll talk to Bill. I'll explain why and how. Interviewed Bill as well coming up at the end of the podcast. So that's all on the way this week. As always, let's get into this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is what you call a flip.
Number 10
keys from a car to brick. Bentley from his mama whip. K.O.D. he hard as shit. This is what you call a flip. 10 keys from a car to brick. Bentley from his mama whip. K.O.D. he hard as shit.
901 Shelby Drive. Look alive.
Number
look alive.
9.
Niggas came up on this side. Now they on the other side. Oh well, fuck them dawg. We gon' see how hard they ride. I get racks to go outside.
My number 1. I don't need nothing on the side.
Number 8.
Said that I was done for good and don't want no more lies. But my phone be blowing up temptations on my line. I stare at
you. Oh, baby.
Number 7.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me?
Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it.
Number
count
6.
It up, count it up, count it up, count it. Count it up, count it up. Count it up, count it. Can't take it when you die, but you can't live without it. Count it up, count it up.
Be gone psycho, little mama bad like Michael. Can't really trust nobody with all this jewelry on you. My roof look like a no-so. Got diamonds by the bolo. Don't act like you my friend when I'm rolling through my hands.
It's meant to be, it'll be, baby, if it's meant to be.
Number 4.
So come on, ride with me, ride.
God's plan.
Number 2.
I hold back sometimes I won't. Yeah. I feel good sometimes I don't. Hey, no. I finesse down Western Road. Hey, nice.
And number 1.
Your reflection without a follow, without a mention. You really piping up on these niggas. You gotta be nice for what to these niggas? I understand.
Okay, so a lot of things happening on this week's chart, and for once, they're not centered around Drake.
Even though he's number 1 and number 2.
Yeah, right. Don't forget about Drake, of course, who you heard bringing up the tail end of that segment, meaning that he is sitting at the top of the chart once again. Nice for what? 3 weeks at number 1 now. Right below that, more Drake. God's Plan, former number 1, in its 14th week on the Hot 100. And has not been lower than number 2. So almost coming up on 4 months into that song's life. Just goes to show that 2018, even though we thought Drake might be away for a minute, you know, I mean, he's really ruled this first quarter, second quarter. We've got the album coming out in June. So this could be, I mean, every year is the year of Drake, but this could be the year of Drake.
And those 14 weeks, he's been at number 1 all 14 weeks. Because for the 3 weeks that God's Plan has been down to number 2, Dice from what? It's been at number 1.
Okay, now if you are tired of us talking about Drake, because we've been doing that for the past 14 weeks, you'll have a welcome potential challenger for number 1, maybe, in the next coming month. Ariana Grande is back in a big way with her new song, No Tears Left to Cry, which debuts at number 3 this week. Great debut for her. Only one other song in her catalog has debuted this high on the Hot 100. That was Problem back in 2014. We saw the damage that that song did. Ended up a number 2 hit. 16 weeks in the top 10. So obviously the Ariana stans are going to be looking at this, maybe to repeat that success at least. And of course, could it do one better? Go all the way to the top of the chart. All right, now Ariana has the top debut of the week, but somebody else has the most debuts of the week in the top 10. A record-setting week for J. Cole, who debuts 3 songs in the top 10, the first time that any artist has ever stacked the top 10 with 3 new songs in the same week. Drake fans, of which there are many, will remember that Drake has done this twice before, and Ed Sheeran, actually the first person to do this, when Shape of You and Castle on the Hill both debuted at the top of 2017. So, huge week for J. Cole. We saw, obviously, the album also do massive numbers. Number 1 on the Billboard 200. I think, kind of spinning forward already, people will probably be eyeing Post Malone to probably duplicate this feat next week.
Right.
We saw Post Malone break J. Cole's barely week record for the highest opening day on Spotify, both worldwide and in the U.S. So if we saw what that ended up meaning for J. Cole on the Hot 100, I'm sure people will already be looking for Post Malone to do it as well. Post Malone, of course, also in the top 10 this week, as you guys heard just now, Psycho with Ty Dolla $ign still holding strong. Rockstar, of course, which number one hit 8 weeks last year, also on this album. So, you know, already shaping up to be potentially the biggest streaming week ever for any album, bigger than Drake. And so expect to see a lot of Post Malone on the Hot 100 next week. The question is just how many and how high.
Yeah. So for this week, J. Cole, as you mentioned, Trevor, three debuts in the top 10. Never happened before. With Ariana debuting at number three, that's four debuts in the top 10. That's never happened before. There'd been a couple of weeks this decade where there'd been three debuts in the top 10, but 40% of the top 10 brand new this week for the first time ever.
Yeah, a lot of things happening, you know, which is kind of nice. For the past couple weeks, maybe a little, you know, I mean, it's obviously been all Drake and still is really all Drake, but nice to see some challengers shake up the some of the closer rungs up there.
All right. So to talk about this new Ariana hit, let's bring in Andrew Unterberger from Billboard's edit department to discuss where it fits in her catalog. Just your opinion, Andrew, of the song. Can this go to number one? So a couple stories you wrote. The first one was just about how she came back with the song after Manchester. Did she strike the right tone with the lyrics? Because you sort of want to acknowledge what happened, but you want to be positive going forward. Your opinion of the song, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's a good song. It's funny. I talked to a number of people around the office, and it seems like they all kind of had the same evolving opinion. It was at first that they were, you know, it's not an instant home run, maybe the way a lot of people were expecting. Like a lot of people were expecting kind of like the sequel to Break Free and to kind of even like take it to like another level of just straight emotional catharsis and, you know, like disco, just hitting them right out the gate. It's not quite like that. It's a little bit more subdued, maybe. It's a little bit more emotionally tempered. The beat isn't quite as propulsive, maybe, as you would have expected. And the emotional element of the song is definitely there, but it's a little bit less like anthemic, maybe, than you would have expected. But as I wrote and as I still believe, it's sort of the appropriate note for her to be striking here. I think it's the right tone, and that it isn't if she was to do an explicit sort of "I Will Survive" song, that might kind of cheapen the incident, what happened, and, you know, the fact that even though she was obviously at the center of it, she wasn't, you know, one of the victims. She wasn't one of the victims' families. Right. So she wants to kind of, you know, she doesn't want to make it all about her. And I think this song did a good job of saying, "Wow, what a terrible thing that happened." And, you know, we'll hopefully all move on from it, but I'm not going to make this as if, like, this is my personal triumph over this tragedy. It's just, this is a terrible thing that happened, and now let's try to get over it if we can.
And musically, it feels even a little experimental to me. It feels like the hook is sort of those chords that kind of propel the song, and when she kind of comes in with the title, it's not like your typical chorus structure.
It's an unpredictable song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it has a little bit of like an early 90s dance feel to it, which isn't really the wave right now. So I'm very curious to see how the song will do on radio, because, yeah, the melodic shifts in it sort of come out of nowhere, and the rhythm of it isn't necessarily what you would hear on 2018 Top 40. So I don't know. You know, you guys, I think, were talking a little bit earlier about how you could see this being like a big summer song. I don't really see it for this one. I think it's going to be a fan favorite, and it might have like kind of a long shelf life, but I don't see it really being summer jam type stuff. I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be in the song of the summer discussion. I think we'll be done hearing this on radio in a month or two. It's closer even to like Lord's Greenlight from last year than most of the songs that you hear on radio now. I think it's the kind of song that feels kind of to people who've been listening to the radio for a long time, it feels like a radio single, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a super up to the moment kind of radio single. So I mean, we'll see. Do you guys disagree with that?
Yeah, I disagree. Okay. And part of it is Lorde didn't have the track record that Ariana has at Top 40,
but she has one thing that Ariana doesn't.
Well, we're gonna get to that.
All right, but I'm just saying. Trevor's scandalized by me throwing down the gauntlet between Lorde and Ariana Grande right now.
Yeah, when I first heard it, and even a couple times when I hear it, it's a little bit like left of what I expected to come out, especially when I guess reports surfaced that it was going to be Max Martin and Pharrell and kind of the usual power players of the past 5 years.
Right.
And I don't know, because I guess especially in Ariana's case, you see, as we've mentioned several times, what's happened to pop stars in the past 15 months, and that, you know, when you come out with an expected pop song, a lot of them went nowhere. And so you have to try something, I think, left of center to be the case. I mean, will radio grab onto it? I don't know. I mean, I think for a lot of people, maybe the song had a better than expected start, and so maybe that will help push its fortunes up. Because Ariana Grande is not known to be a streaming powerhouse, not really known to, I guess, sell a whole ton to where you would expect a number three debut coming out of this. The last album also a little uneven ground. I mean, obviously, Dangerous Woman was a hit. Into You wasn't quite as big a hit, and so, you know, Side to Side is what really kind of saved Dangerous Woman, in my opinion.
That was ways into the rollout.
No, and I mean, it worked out, and I think this album, I think they're looking at this album as, you know, it's got to be a hit. You know, I feel like, especially given what we saw with Katy and Gaga, and to some effects, even Taylor and everybody, you know, this is not only a moment, A, for her to save her career, but also if that sort of pop queen vacancy is open, this can propel her even forward, even more.
Yeah, I think that Ariana is a little bit better suited to kind of adjust to the next era of the pop charts and of streaming and of pop music in general, because she had kind of one foot in the hip hop world from the very beginning. You know, first singles with, you know, Mac Miller. She's worked with Future, and she's worked with Lil Wayne and plenty of other rappers who are, you know, a little bit more of the moment than some of the people that, you know, the Kelly Clarkson and Lady Gaga's of the world we're working with. And she's younger.
The Weeknd, huge hit there.
Yeah, sure, of course. And his first really big pop hit.
Yeah.
So she kind of feels like part of this generation more than some of those other people. But, you know, even, you know, we talking about this, even Selena Gomez recently has kind of fallen on hard times. And she also is a very young pop star who, you know, certainly seems like she's part of this generation. And
you're shaking your head, Trevor.
I'm not shaking my head. I just
Charge doesn't want to make any enemies on the Sharpie podcast.
Oh, of course not. No. Okay. I'm neutral.
And I like Selena Gomez, and I liked her last couple singles a great deal. But the fact of the matter is that none of them peaked particularly high on the Hot 100, at least by her standards.
It was sort of weird. She had a couple experimental songs in there with Fetish and
Bad Liar.
Sure. But, you know, that
even
was,
Wolves was kind of a weird song when you get down to it.
Yeah, but that sort of felt to me like the follow up sonically to It Ain't Me, which was a top 10 hit, and Wolves was a top 10 pop radio hit. So I feel like she's just put out so much product that a couple have missed, sure, but a couple have been huge hits.
Yeah, and I think that the next song she does that connects will you know, it's not going to be like a story of you know, triumph after a long period out in the wilderness. You know, when she's back, it'll seem like she never left.
Right.
So that's fine. And I think the same thing could very well be true of Ariana, but I just don't think this is necessarily the song that's going to do it for her.
You know, when you go experimental, you can go everywhere, and you can be experimental on a lot of experimental flops. And so just for some of these artists who have, you know, that's just got to be such a weird paradigm between probably what the label wants and what the artist wants, maybe bigger than ever before in the pop world.
But the good news is that memories are shorter these days, I think. You know, one flop single doesn't really set your career back the way it used to. At least I don't personally feel that way. So, you know, I think you can kind of release songs here and there, and then you can do what Selena did and, you know, release three songs spaced out over the like 3 months each, and maybe they're on an album and maybe they're not.
Right.
Maybe the next album is completely different, and she has the freedom to kind of reinvent herself the way she sees fit. She's not tied to any of those singles as dictating the next 18 months of her rollout life. So I think that, you know, there's good and bad to come with this, and there's things that pop stars, I think, are, you know, there's advantages to these days for them, and there's disadvantages. So yeah, it's an interesting time.
All right, well, one loose thread that we had teased a little bit back, we should pick back up, is you mentioned Lorde has something that Ariana Grande doesn't.
Yes, sir.
And if you are an Ariana Grande fan, you hate Andrew right now because
for any number of reasons, but this one most recently, sure.
Yeah, chiefly among those at this moment, the fact that, yes, Ariana Grande has yet to touch the top spot on the Hot 100. Nine top tens, so obviously been in the mix for a while. But
five top fives, too, I think. Something like that.
You bring it. Five top fives, but not quite that number one. So Andrew actually does an annual column, looking at the question of who is the biggest pop star of the moment without a number one hit. And so there are a good number of artists that he wrote down. Ariana Grande also making the list. J. Cole As we talked about a little earlier as well. As people who are still looking for that first number one, I guess let's go through the list really quick. Gary, if you want to read out, follow along on Billboard.com if you're there. Right, just some contenders who have not touched that top spot.
Yeah, after Ariana, Andrew mentioned someone who's had one of those top five hits with Ariana, Nicki Minaj, which, again, I think a lot of her fans, that's still kind of a bit of a sticking point that she's got to number two with Anaconda.
I think of the artists I read about on this list, Nicki's the one that's been pop relevant for the longest. You know, I think her first top 100 hit was maybe 2009, 2010 at the latest. So, I mean, she's been in the mix for a very long time. She's gotten close.
Almost a decade. Wow. Yeah, you wouldn't think it's been almost a decade.
Yeah, right.
For some reason, it still feels like 2015 or something. But yeah.
And still scoring top 10 hits and still in that mix for that number one, possibly, hopefully, at some point. But came close as recently, as early as 2011, as recently as 2014, but never quite got to that number one.
Well, the sticking point now for a lot of people, a lot of watchers, is somebody else came along and went straight to number one over Nicki.
I heard about that. Yeah.
If you don't know, that's Cardi B, Bodak Yellow. So people think that Nicki, especially maybe with this next album, has to bring it. I mean, it's something that, I guess, in a way, no female rapper really kind of done it on her own in this era, and now for this newcomer to come up, I think people think that will go down as a huge mark against Nicki if she can't figure it out.
Well, I think you guys would probably support that. The game has changed in this matter since Nicki first came out. I mean, if the rules were as they were in terms of streaming and in terms of Spotify sort of being the core of Spotify and other streaming services being the core of what makes up a lot of the Hot 100 these days, Starships was a viral hit. Superbass certainly was a viral hit. Anaconda was about as viral as they come. I think it's not unreasonable to suggest that had one of those songs come out in the last year and a half, 2 years, probably a different discussion right now, right? I mean, obviously Cardi was helped by being, being at the core of the streaming era, and Bodak Yellow really took off there. It's you have to kind of weigh different eras differently, sort of when it comes to rap singles. I think it's if you want to take it to sports, there's certain eras where no one in the league hits more than 35 home runs, and then there's other eras where people are hitting 60 left and right.
Right.
So you got to kind of adjust for inflation there. And obviously now it's a lot easier for rap singles to hit number one on the Hot 100 than it used to be. And I think that Nicki's longevity is a incredible sort of mark there. The fact that she's still regularly scoring top 10 hits almost a decade after her first is something that Cardi B can only hope to match in several years' time. And
do you think Nicki Minaj has to hit number one as a lead?
As in, do I think that she'll get dinged for it if it's only as a feature?
Yes.
Well, if you're comparing her to Cardi, then yeah, I think so, because Cardi did it entirely on her own. Not only was she not a feature, but she didn't have. I mean, unless you want to count Kodak Black's kind of ghostly presence there as a sort of originator of the Bodak Yellow hook and melody, then you can say he helped her there. But otherwise, it's only her name on the chart listing. So for Nicki to get in as a guest, yeah, I mean that'll be a bit of an asterisk for her. What do you think?
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I guess it all. I guess, well, I say yes, and then I kind of think it back to depending on what song it is. Because I'm a big advocate of the fan. Of the theory that there are certain songs that the featured artist makes or breaks. I mean, we've seen so many Rihanna features that I bet you this song wouldn't be half as popular if Rihanna were not doing the hook. And so I think for Nicki, depending on what kind of song, maybe if it's a pop song and people feel like she sort of sold out and threw a verse on, and not all the stations are playing the Nicki verse, and she sort of just kind of tags along.
If it's the like the Madonna "Give Me All Your Love" and sort of guest verse,
I think people might say, okay, she just did it for the number one.
Sure.
But I mean, maybe if it's the Monster verse,
that makes its way.
Absolutely. People will say, damn, Nicki is what got that song to number one. So maybe it depends on the scenario.
Trevor, you mentioned J. Cole before, and that's on your list, Andrew, too. Kind of thinking just in terms of rappers who've been so huge, known for albums, but not necessarily singles, and maybe he can become like what Kendrick did last year with Humble. Is J. Cole kind of waiting for that Humble song that's going to break him through to mainstream audiences with one specific song?
Care about that?
He hasn't really come close to anything like that yet, but again, Kendrick certainly had no big radio hits off of To Pimp a Butterfly. Even off of Good Kid, M.A.A.d City, he had hits, but not the kind of crossover that you would expect from someone of his stature. And certainly, Humble changed the entire game for him there. J. Cole seems to care less about kind of that, making that big moment, that big splash with his first single. You know, even Humble, at least, was released a couple weeks, I think, ahead of Damn. Whereas Cole made a couple videos for this album, but they basically debuted along with the rest of it. It seems like the focus for Cole is really on making that kind of full album statement. And if you have favorite songs from there, if you want to look at the video from there, then that's fine. But he won't kind of give you that lead time to sort of acclimate to a song being the song from the album before he hits you with the whole thing.
Is ATM, does that sound like a potential breakout, even pop hit? I feel like it could.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. I will say, listening through the album the first couple times, it didn't really strike me as, wow, like, this is going to be the song. But, I don't know if I'm sure you've seen in watching the Sixers Celtics games on the NBA playoffs that ABC and ESPN have started to use it for some of their pregame advertisements. And I think it has its own video, and it seems to be the focus track from this album. And obviously, it's the highest debuting. And I think it's a jam. I was listening to it over the weekend. I was like, oh, this is better than I realized initially.
Kudos to you, Andrew, for bringing up the Celtics. This is after game one.
A sore subject, but, I do it for the podcast.
We talked about Selena before. That was interesting that you put on your list 21 Pilots, mm-hmm. just because they've kind of been away for a little bit. They had three huge hits in 2016-17, but you're putting them as one of these acts that still could get that number one, maybe with their next album.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know with 21 Pilots. They have been gone for... if you count from the initial release of Blurry Face, the album with two of those three hits on it, then that's almost 3 years at this point, which in 2018 is a pretty long time. Now, you've seen other artists. I think, there's not that much more time in between these albums. If 21 Pilots were to release one this year, it'd be basically the same layover that Ed Sheeran had between his last two albums, about 2.5 years, something like that. Clearly didn't affect Ed Sheeran when he came back. Of course, having Shape of You helps. But I think it will be sort of about what that first 21 Pilots single, like how that lands and how the album does from there. I could see them saying, we don't really care about these singles. We don't really care about pop life. We're just going to, kind of cater to our fan base and do what we want to do. And, maybe they never get this close again. But I could also see them coming up with their own Shape of You and dominating the charts for, a quarter of a year. Nothing would shock me, really.
Do you think that, do you think 21 Pilots has that same sort of problem that, once you get this unexpected massive pop smash, how that changes the conversations about what the follow-up needs to be, has to be, should be?
Maybe, but I think that their fans are so in at this point. Like, when I first heard Heathens, I didn't think, wow, we were going to be listening to this song for the rest of the year. I definitely didn't think that this was going to be a song that contended for number one. I thought it was a soundtrack single. It was, kind of a one-off in between albums, and, maybe it'll, alternative radio will play it, maybe pop will catch on a little bit, but I never would have expected it to be one of the biggest hits of the year.
I thought it was weird, but I thought it was really catchy.
It's minor key. It's the rock, most rock of their three big hits, I think, and it's a little weird energy. The lyrics are not immediately accessible. I think that if another band had come out with that song, you would never have expected it to be a crossover hit. So I think that their fan base is really just, whatever 21 Pilots want to give them at this point, at least the evidence suggests that they'll be one to accept. So will they change it up for album two, or not album two, but their second album as superstars? We'll see.
The other act that you mentioned, sort of tied to them, that I think maybe in some ways is more positioned to maybe get that first number one, because they've already shown that sort of with every single, they kind of change their sound, and maybe they've locked into what their sound's going to be a little bit more going forward. Imagine Dragons kind of seems like now they're every single you're going to get is sort of this mix of rock, but these big choruses, some hip hop elements. They're kind of throwing everything in there, and it's working. Feels like they're kind of on that trajectory where they keep working on this recipe. It might lead to a number one.
Yeah, I mean, those guys know what they're doing. 21 Pilots do too, but in a different sort of way. I feel like whereas 21 Pilots kind of let their fan base come to them and radio come to them, Imagine Dragons are just very attuned to what's going on. They know what 2018 radio sounds like. They know how important streaming is. They know how important syncs are and advertisements. They know how to play the game. And they write really good songs. And they write songs that aren't that, well, they're rock in nature. They're not dependent on rock conventions instrumentally. They're not tied to rock history, that they're willing to kind of go forth into the rock future, which is a little bit less, it's a little bit less instrumental, and in terms of like conventional, rock guitar based drum breakdowns, they're willing to kind of experiment with pop choruses and pop producers. They have hip hop beats. They have kind of electronic soundscapes. So they know what it takes. I mean, no pun intended. They know what it takes to have a hit in pretty much whatever year they're in, and they have a pretty devoted fan base too, and they play arenas, and they're about as reliable a presence on top 40 now as you have, which is pretty strange for a rock band, especially one whose last album was not a huge hit. The one before Evolve, Smoke and Mirrors, was pretty marginal in terms of top 40, but the course corrected, and I think you'd be foolish to underestimate them at this point.
Yeah, when they came out with It's Time, sort of seemed like, oh, they're almost kind of a jangly rock band, and they went kind of that folky direction with I Bet My Life, and now it seems like they figured out Radioactive is the big hit, and then Believer and Thunder seem to be in that mold, so maybe we're just going to keep getting more of that.
Yeah, three top five Hot 100 hits. Does the rest of the rock genre have three combined over the same time span? It's probably pretty close.
The Hot Rock Songs chart has become the Imagine Dragons.
There you go.
To what Drake is to the Hot 100, Imagine Dragons is to rock.
They put in the work. Are they really this much better and this much more popular than every other rock band out right now? Probably not. But they know what it takes, and they're willing to kind of meet the pop game halfway. And that's not something a lot of rock bands are ambitious enough to do these days.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
A couple other acts that I just want to mention in the story. One of them, I think, is sort of more on par with Ariana Grande, because it just coming from a pure pop angle. Shawn Mendes hasn't had a number one yet.
Yeah, I mean, Shawn, I think that a lot of people, maybe they didn't view him as a one-hit wonder necessarily, but they thought he was kind of, he's a viral sensation. He comes from the YouTube world. When Stitches broke big, people were maybe, a little bit taken aback, but I don't think that they would have seen him being able to maintain the kind of success that he has, where it's really just kind of single after single. Not everything goes top 10, but everything goes top 20, and he's on every award show, and it just seems like he's a guy who everybody likes. We had him in The Office a little while ago, and he played some songs off his new album, and he was unbelievably charming and composed for his age, and the songs were really good. And I think he's the same kind of guy. He's another sort of guy that you just don't want to underestimate, because he clearly knows what he's doing, and he clearly has the right people behind him, and he's making the right connections, and he's pushing all the right buttons, and. The newer single, In My Blood, hasn't quite taken off maybe the same way as There's Nothing Holding Me Back or Treat You Better from the last couple albums. But again, he understands the kind of rock song that doesn't sound out of place on top 40 these days. And he has a lot of really, really devoted fans, and he knows how to cater to them. And I wouldn't, even if this song doesn't necessarily be the one to put him over the top, I wouldn't underestimate him in singles to come.
The other act that I think in some ways is kind of interesting that you put on this list, and in some ways not, Florida Georgia Line.
6 months ago, I would never have considered Florida Georgia Line for this piece. I mean, they're a constant presence on the country charts. They always sell well. They're always on award shows. But they hadn't had a proper kind of four quadrant crossover hit since Cruise. And that was in 2013. And it came with a Nelly guest verse that kind of put it in that upper echelon. But here we are with them having, the number two song in the country for a number of weeks, Meant to Be, the BB Rexha collaboration. a couple of, you know, volume shooters in their respective genres, Florida Georgia Line, you know, they never met a collaboration they didn't like, and certainly you could say the same about BB REXA. And so, you know, you don't really know what to expect when two of those sort of artists get together, but clearly they found the chemistry there, and they found enough common elements that they had a song that really, really connected. And, you know, do I think that Florida Georgia Line will make number one on their own with kind of a traditional song for their country base? Probably not, because as we've seen in the last couple of years, country songs don't tend to challenge for that high of Maha 100, you know, due to country not streaming as well and a couple other factors. But, you know, would you be shocked if they had a song with Drake on his next album? Or, you know,
they've already worked with Nelly.
Yeah, so, like, or even, you know, they've joined forces with Sam Hunt or something like that. It's clearly they've shown the willingness to go outside of their comfort zone. And if they had a number one song in the next couple of years, it would not be all that surprising, I don't think.
So the 10 acts you've got on this list, we went through most of them. Zedd, Future also in that mix. A few other wild cards. Gary came up with a few ideas here. He's thinking maybe Sam Smith could be a surprise, given how...
I'm sorry. Go on.
No, go ahead. We'll talk about Sam. You think it's a... What?
I think Sam Smith's trending in the wrong direction.
Trending in the wrong direction.
I mean, that huge hit he just had.
Was it as big as the biggest hit from his album before that?
I think it was a bigger hit than people might have expected, because it was so against the grain of what pop music is right now for a song that's so adult-oriented like that. For that to have been in the top 10 for so many weeks, that's what surprised me, that it really did cut through.
It's a big hit, but it's the only one that album's coming up with so far, and that album's been out for a minute. And, you know, I think that... You know, we all kind of compared him to Adele when the new album came out. And we wondered if he would be able to...
Oh, didn't we?
Well, some of us did, certainly. And there's comparisons to be made there. And I don't think any of us thought that he was going to put up quite Adele-like numbers. But we wondered, all right, so this is kind of an old-school sort of singer. And he clearly has a very wide appeal, and in terms of both demographics and age range. So would he be able to come up with the kind of song that would have a sort of Hello-like effect? And that, you know, obviously it's not what radio... You know, it's not radio's bread and butter in 2018, but it's sort of such an undeniable, you know, massive crossover ballad that it ends up dominating the culture anyway. Although Too Good a Goodbyes was a big hit, I don't think you would say it was on the caliber of a Hello. It wasn't quite on that level, I don't think.
That was just total pop culture everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But nothing's going to pretty much match that.
And the first week sales were good, but they weren't extraordinary.
It was its longevity that did it. I think we expected it to kind of have that first bump and then slide off, and it really stayed through maybe end of the year. Ballads tend to do a little bit better in the winter, I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I'm not trying to shortchange what Sam Smith accomplished on this album. He certainly, you know, had success with it, and he had a big hit off of it, but it does feel like a sag of momentum from the last one, and it also kind of worries me that like the Adele album, it sort of felt like the album before it, but maybe not quite as potent, not quite as... not quite as game-changing, certainly. So I think that for Sam Smith to be in the consideration for number one in the future, he's going to have to change things up a little bit. And he hasn't yet shown the willingness to do that. But, you know, he kind of came up through the dance world, with the songs with Disclosure and Naughty Boy. I think that if he kind of dips back into that territory, there might be more potential for him there.
Right.
But as a balladeer and kind of a straight-faced singer of these very dramatic love songs and breakup songs, I think that the pie is getting smaller for him, and I don't think that I don't think that he's one of the odds-on favorites of these types of artists to really break through there.
Did you consider what your process was? Like, you're an artist. What is your process? did you consider putting Alessia Cara on this list?
I didn't really consider her, but yeah, she's on the bubble, certainly. I'd say she has better odds than Sam Smith. Her career is on the ascent, certainly. So yeah, all the best of luck to Alessia.
Oh, big album coming up, it feels like, after that Best New Artist win.
For sure.
Kind of got to defend that territory.
And the other acts I'm just going to bring up, I'll just throw it out there for people, for the fans. Sort of like your podcast, Andrew.
We buried this deep in there, but if the fans are there.
Like Coming Around Again, which may come around again at some point in your podcast.
See, you know, who can predict the future, Gary?
One Direction and Fifth Harmony haven't had number ones. They're on hiatus. If they came back with the right song, you have to think at least the anticipation, if nothing else, would be there.
Take the right song of it.
Well, if they came back without the wrong song, I guess would be the idea there. If they came back with the song that was close to their kind of average potential for a hit single, maybe. Again, musically, at least for One Direction, things are sort of trending away from their kind of like, you know, power pop sort of sound. But yeah, I mean, if the fan base is still there in 5 years, it's possible. Fifth Harmony, I think, is a little bit less likely. I think they're, at the end of the day, they're still a little bit more niche than One Direction were.
All right, let's have some good news for fans who really want Ariana to get that first number one. Some major stars this decade who've taken some time to get that first number one. So Taylor Swift, she took about 6 years from her chart debut and granted country to pop. But even before officially her all-out segue to pop, sure. We Are Never Ever Getting Together, number one in 2012. Justin Bieber.
Don't forget, I mean, when some of these artists hit number one, it's not just a one-time thing. I mean, now we've seen Taylor with 5 number ones sure. to her name. So, right. You know, once you make that breakthrough, it seems like it gets a little easier.
Good segue to Bieber, because he waited 6 years, too, and then 3 straight number ones for him.
And also, what, 5 now, officially, altogether?
Right.
Yep.
Ed Sheeran, about 4 years, which is where Ariana is right now, 2013 till about now. Drake, it took about 7 years as a lead artist. Yeah, he got that first number one on What's My Name, but it feels like now almost a decade in, he's kind of at his biggest career point ever.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what's made this current moment so, I don't know, surprising, but it's jarring to those of us who remember what a struggle it was for him to break through with that first number one and, you know, Hotline Bling, and he got to number two. And now it feels like he's going to be number one for the rest of our lives, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, Miley Cyrus, sort of similar with the kind of the same upbringing mm-hmm. In terms of pop culture. She took about 7 years. And if you're really going to play the long game, Aerosmith took 25 years until wow. their first number one. So Ariana, she could even take.
So she's still got 21 more years in her.
Well, what's interesting to me, you reading over that list right now, is how many of those artists did get to number two before they got to number one. You know, Taylor Swift got to number two with You Belong With Me, Justin Bieber, I think, with Boyfriend, Drake, we just said, with Hotline Bling.
Ed Sheeran, Thinking Out Loud.
Sure, and then Ariana as well. You know, if she gets to number one someday, then she'll have had that stop along the path as well, right. with Problem. So yeah, you know, it's like, you know, going back to sports, sometimes you got to lose in the finals before you can taste that championship glory, and it seems like the same is true with a lot of these pop stars.
2003 Red Sox, that's what led to 2004.
There you go. Yeah.
Good. I see you, Philly and Boston fans.
We're agree coming on together on the Chart B podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions. It has been 86 years. Generations have come and gone. And for the first time since 1918, the Boston Red Sox are champions of baseball.
If you go way back, 70s, Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan, they both hit number two as artists, although they've had number ones as writers. So a little consolation there. James Brown, number three, was his biggest hit. If you go to the 90s, NSYNC did get to number one. Backstreet Boys got to number two, if that's never been played up among
surprisingly
fans.
Few number ones of that entire TRL era. It's NSYNC got one, and Britney got one, and Christina got a couple, but no Backstreet Boys and none of those other boy bands, all, you know, they all came close. 98 Degrees, LFO, O-Town, I think all the top five hits there, but no number ones.
Well, shout out to O-Town.
Yeah, well, it was boy band week just a week ago, yeah. So I'm still in that mindset a little bit.
Yeah. Love you, Jesse.
Journey got to number two with Open Arms. In the 90s, people might think, especially with the album success, both Hootie and the Blowfish and Alanis Morissette kind of owned the 90s, the pop rock side. Hootie got to number six with Only Want to Be With You. Alanis got to number four with Ironic.
And the entire grunge era there too. You know, Nirvana, I think, peaked at number six with Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam got randomly close in the very late 90s with Last Kiss, and that was number two. But yeah, none of those bands that you really associate with that moment where, you know, the 90s kind of, you know, the alternative became the mainstream, didn't become that much the mainstream, because none of those bands really ever got to number one on the Hot 100.
Nah, those babyface ballads were still locking it down.
Yeah, well, no shame in getting beaten by the best, certainly.
It's not the be all and end all. Obviously, there are huge artists who've never had a number one, but it's certainly a nice feather you want to have. There have been 1,072 number ones all time in the Hot 100's history. Do you guys know how many artists have hit number one?
I'll say 450.
You think that many people have doubled up? Wow. I'll say 565.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I would have guessed, but I did look up the number. All right, Trevor, you were closer. 697.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm. But you're both pretty close.
Oh, that's
ding,
a
ding, 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 Bob Barker. I'm fine. Going up on the prices, right?
Well, that's why it's your podcast, and I'm just the featured appearance.
Yeah. So we'll see if Ariana can be 697.
Yeah. And best of luck to her. I hope if she doesn't do it with this song, she does it soon.
Well, thanks to our featured appearance by Andrew Unterberger, Billboard's senior editor.
Senior editor. Okay. We can go with that.
We can go with a lot of things. I mean, Billboard's Lord and Savior.
So wrapping up the podcast, we always do a flashback. You always pick a song, Trevor. In this case, went even deeper. I found someone to do the work for us. We're going to go back to the 70s. So Bill Danoff, mentioned at the beginning of the show, he wrote a couple of huge hits in the 70s that I feel like just become just so much a part of Americana. Take Me Home, Country Roads by John Denver in 1971. And Afternoon Delight by Starland Vocal Band. That was his band in 1976. So here's what happened recently. My father is a huge John Denver fan. And we found out that there was a John Denver tribute concert happening in Maryland. And John Denver died, so you're never going to see John Denver in concert. They figured maybe this was the closest we can ever get. Was it worth driving 6 hours to see a John Denver tribute concert? Me, my father, and my brother? Of course it was. So we did that.
Dedicate? I mean,
you wouldn't do that for a John Denver tribute concert?
I wouldn't drive 6 minutes to see a John Denver concert, but shout out to the Trust for being dedicated. Well, look, okay, because everyone's kind of looking at me. I guess I'll say I don't know John Denver's catalog very well, so maybe I do love him, and I just don't know it.
All right, Meg, you're even younger than Trevor. You know John Denver music.
I do know John Denver, and I really appreciate his music.
Here's what I'll do. I'll listen to There's Gotta Be a Greatest Hits or 12 out there. I'll check it out, and next week I'll let you guys know what I think.
Next time we get out to Maryland, we can rent a little van, save a couple seats for you guys.
I'm definitely in on that.
Tentative.
At least every road trip I've been on, I think I've always played the song.
Did you drive through West Virginia? I guess not.
That's I do the song.
Yeah.
You've driven through?
Country Road. Yeah.
You've driven through West Virginia listening to that song?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It probably should be banned on, like, West Virginia radio, because I'm sure, like...
They've heard it so many times.
All right, so we drove down. Yeah, we did this whole fun road trip. Hadn't, you know, done a trip like that, the three of us, in a long time. So that was kind of cool. The show was at a converted train station. Trains were still going by, so it was kind of a cool atmosphere. We stayed in a little bed and breakfast. It was really just a real small town, really. There were jacuzzis in each room. Want to put that image in your head.
And if you actually want to put that image on your screen, go to Gary's Instagram.
So the two singers at the show, Bill Danoff and Sean McGee, was the other singer. Sean sounds just like John Denver, so it really was kind of cool. It was close you're going to get to hearing what he sounds like. Here's a clip, actually, him doing any song. Didn't write that song, but he did co-write John Denver's debut number 2 Hot 100 hit from 1971, Take Me Home, Country Roads. So my father, huge John Denver fan, just for years, he's always, you know, why can't you talk about John Denver on the podcast? Why can't you write about John Denver? So we're going to talk all about John Denver. In fact, I had my father interview Bill Danoff, the writer of this song. So we went to the show. They interviewed, talked about his whole history of writing that song, where Take Me Home, Country Roads came from, how kind of interesting how it became a big pop hit. but it wasn't a big country hit at all. Country kind of didn't know what to do with John Denver at the time. His new folk singer didn't really fit. So that's kind of interesting. I'll talk about that. It's actually John Denver added the bridge to Take Me Home Country Roads. That's how his contribution to the writing of that came about. And the song came back in 2016 as a number one country hit finally, thanks to the All-Star Forever Country remake. So yeah, it just shows the longevity. So figured, why should I do all the work? Let my father do some of the work. So Richard Trust making his podcast debut here on the Billboard Sharpie podcast. So we'll close with this interview, some clips. Kind of cool always to hear from the people who have written some of these songs that have just become a part of your life. You don't even really think about a time when they didn't exist.
All right. So before we dive into that, we'll see you next week. Two things. If you're a Post Malone fan, be sure to check in with the podcast. We'll be talking all about his debut, this very likely streaming record, and all the songs that will spill over into the Hot 100.
And remember, call us. We want you to be on the podcast with us. 212-493-40-1. It's our hotline. We want to hear from you. We want to put you on the podcast to answer your chart questions. So please call us and leave us a good comment or question. 212-493-40-1. Trevor, just by the way, if your father ever wants to be on the podcast, who would he interview? Wouldn't be a John Denver writer. Who would it be?
I would say a Prince writer, because my dad's a huge fan of Prince, but of course, the Prince writer is Prince.
It's Prince.
And without further ado, to talk about Take Me Home, Country Roads, take us home, Gary's dad.
Western Mass.
Springfield, Massachusetts.
Okay. When Take Me Home Country Roads was being written, was it first said Massachusetts instead of West Virginia?
No, it didn't say anything. Just said Country Roads, Country Roads, Country Roads, Country Roads, Country Roads. And then in my head, you know, mm-hmm. and I was trying to fill out the spaces, and then I got to the, where I needed that, the words just kind of grew little by little, then you find you need one here or there, and so I needed that three-syllable word, and I toyed with Massachusetts, but I didn't like it as a word, as a singing word.
Okay.
And it's funny, because a couple of weeks later,
The Bee Gees
came out with a song, Massachusetts.
Right.
Which, I like the Bee Gees, but it wasn't, to me, sound-wise, not a great word. And like I said in there, I like the word Shenandoah. I like those words, Virginia. Shenandoah, Blue Ridge, what images? Just don't even need a song. Say those words, and it sounds fun, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River.
Better than the Berkshires?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, the Berkshires was where I still go up there every year.
So it was never Massachusetts, was never part of the song?
It was never part of the song.
Okay.
But it was where, when I first came to Georgetown University, and we went on some sort of a weekend retreat or something. Went out in Maryland, took a bus, and I didn't know anything about... I'd never been out of Massachusetts at all except for a trip to New York, a trip to Detroit once. And that was new to every place. So every place was fascinating to me. So when we were driving around Maryland, and I was thinking, this looks a lot like home, this whole country thing. The only thing was it's bigger. At home, everything, New England, everything's more condensed.
Yeah.
There's a field and there's a thing, only it's smaller. Here, there's a field that's like 200 more acres than it is back home, you know.
Yeah.
It's just more spread out, but it was the same kind of stuff. So when I was down here for, we were going, as time went on, we had one year, 1969, I think, where I did a lot of road trips. And the interstate highway system had really not been finished. There was Jersey Turnpike was there. There were some stretches here and there, even up in Massachusetts. In Springfield, we'd have a two-mile stretch of Interstate 91, and then it would be roads. And that, you know, so it was still that kind of time. You couldn't take an interstate or place. So I remember I just was fascinated by the countryside, the barns with mailhouse tobacco on the sides. I never saw stuff like that, you know. Stuff I had only seen in pictures. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, when we were kids, we had those Viewmasters.
Oh, yeah.
You look in the Viewmaster, yeah. It was 3D pictures. Mm-hmm. Well, this was when I guess it was my youth and what other enhancements of the age were, it made life more interesting. But I suddenly become a real nature fan, and I couldn't get enough of it. So that's where all that country road stuff came from.
How did you know John Denver?
I was a student at Georgetown University from 64 to 68. And while I was there, I worked at a club down the street called the Cellar Door.
Right, I've been there.
Which had we were one of the top folk clubs in the country. The Bitter End in New York, the Troubadour in Los Angeles, the Main Point in Philadelphia. Where did they all play in Chicago? I forgot. Steve Goodman and the Earl of Old Town. That was Steve Goodman and John Prine. Those guys all come out of that. So we were part of that circuit. And John came through with the act, the Mitchell Trio. Mm-hmm. It used to be the Chad Mitchell Trio, now that he replaced Chad.
Right.
So I knew him then as a lights and sound man. Oh. And at the Cellar Door was the kind of atmosphere. It was the students kind of were the operators, the staff and everything. So after the customers left, we'd pull the curtain and close the door. And the act would hang out in the... We all got close, the waiters and the artists and stuff. I mean, like, became friends with Richie Havens, people that you wouldn't... Normally, though, you don't interact with the club people like that, you know, but in the Cellar Door, you did.
Mm-hmm.
So... knew John through that. He was very popular around there. He had a barbecue. He had people come over. It was he had a lot of friends there, so it was kind of a social thing that I was involved in through the work thing.
So when Rocky Mountain High was written by John, that song, that line about on the road hanging by a song, that was referring to Take Me Home, Country Roads.
Probably.
Yeah.
I wasn't, you know, he had, we sang, after we did that original Country Roads, we sang on several of background on John's, those early songs, I think, mm-hmm. were on Poems, Prayers, and Promises, and some of those. So that later on when we went out to do shows with him, we could do like half a dozen songs together.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him sending me a tape of Rocky Mountain High and asking us to sing, and I couldn't hear any parts, you know. So John was like, "You don't want to sing on this song?" I said, "I don't know, John. I don't know what to sing." So he went back and he just overdubbed himself 100 times.
We did, yeah.
And it was a better track than having it made it more powerful. So more voices isn't always, he could have got anybody to sing on it, but it's just I didn't think it was right, and I think I was right.
What other songs did you write either by yourself or with John? That John made famous.
Well, he had
hits. He'd Rather Be in Colorado.
Gotta Be in Colorado. He had country hits with Late Night Radio, Baby You Look Good to Me Tonight. Friends With You was a hit around the world, but not in the States, really. Mm. Minor hit in the States. Please Daddy, Don't Get Drunk This Christmas.
Oh,
That's still making money.
Yeah.
Around the world. That was an odd one. I wrote it as kind of a...
spoof?
Please mm-hmm. Daddy, Don't Get Drunk. We were making fun of it. Well... it turns out when we would do it, some people think it's funny, some people just hit a wrong chord there, you know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting, and Alan Jackson did a great version of it. He did like a honky, like I thought of it, a honky tonk Christmas, piano going and a steel guitar, and like just like I heard it. And anyway, John did it, and I got a thing from New Zealand one time. Somebody wanted to cut it, but they wanted to take out all the references to alcohol. Why don't you just write your own damn song? That's the whole point of the song.
Put an eggnog.
Please, Daddy,
don't get
buy me a, you know, toy that I don't like? What are you going to do with it? You know, I don't know. People are crazy.
Glass of milk. Yeah.
I didn't give him permission to change that lyric.
Are you surprised that John took off the way he did? I mean, he was the biggest selling artist, I believe.
I wasn't as surprised as he was. in 1990-something, we got an award for ASCAP for one of the 10 most performed country songs of the 20th century for Country Roads. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty impressive award. Looks great. But I'm thinking about it, and part of that was the international success that started with things like Country Roads. Mm-hmm. Country music was a small little market. Then with records like Country Roads and then some of those Bobby Russell Honey and Little Green Apples.
Oh, yeah.
Records that would have just been on the country charts went on the pop charts. The music went international, mm-hmm. and that changed the whole ballgame.
He was not easy to pigeonhole. He was country, he was folk, he was pop.
Well, because it was all new. That stuff didn't exist.
Right.
I was talking to Paul Prestipino, who's been there from the beginning, you know, and played with the Mr. Trio. And when we were starting in this business, Columbia Records was the big company. Mitch Miller was the owner, ran Columbia Records.
Yeah.
And come and sing along with Mitch. And he had artists like Bob Dylan, and, you know, he didn't know what to, God bless him, you know, but he didn't know what to do with those acts. Nobody knew what to do with the new people. Mm-hmm. Country music didn't play John Denver. You know, they didn't. Matter of fact, there's a famous thing when John became Country Artist of the Year, one of those assholes, Charlie Rich or somebody, when he had to announce it was John Denver won the award, he burned the thing.
Yeah, the announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so they weren't kind to us, you know.
He was not accepted.
Yeah, and he wasn't accepted anywhere. We were kind of Willie Nelson, those guys, they were the outlaws. We were before them, they didn't know what to do with us.
Yeah.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River.
Life is over. What about Forever Country now?
That tore me apart. And when I first of all I heard about it and I thought, well, that's kind of cool, a new cover of Country Roads. And then when I saw it, the video with Brad Paisley, who's from West Virginia, mm-hmm. singing my song.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Really, yeah.
And all those artists. I thought it was incredible. And when I was listening to it, of course, it's mostly Country Roads, and it's everybody that's beautiful singing Country Roads. And then when it goes to where we would do the bridge, and I think it was Rascal Flatts does On the Road Again, that's such a beautiful lift, man. That just blew me away. It was like, oh, I mean, it was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, my song, instead of going where I would have it go, I went to that, and I'm thinking, oh, that's cooler.
You get royalties from that?
Yes, thankfully. Yeah. Country Roads in about 3 movies last year. Afternoon Delight keeps showing up in movies, and Afternoon Delight keeps meaning something. I rewatched Good Will Hunting the other night for some other reason, but there's Afternoon Delight and Good Will Hunting.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yes, it's fun.
Yeah.
But Country Roads keeps showing up, man. Never would have imagined. Never. I've always wanted to, and maybe I still will. People over the years, of course, send me the stories and things, and your friends and relatives. And you can't believe the stories that during the Vietnam War, it was a huge song. Anything that said "Take Me Home" was huge. The Animals, "We Got to Get Out of This Place." Country Roads. There was a couple other ones, but. It's so many stories from so many different parts of the world. The Papua New Guinea, you know. An old buddy of mine says, he's with the Japanese embassy, and he says, I took my kids to Thailand for a vacation. We were on elephants in the jungle, and we were going by some bamboo house in a tree, and it was Country Roads coming out of a transistor radio.
That's fantastic.
And he said, I told my kids, that was my college roommate. I mean, you can't get away from it, you know. So it's bizarre, frankly. It's bizarre. It's lovely. You can't... couldn't be more grateful.
I hear her voice in the morning as she calls me.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.